Welcome to the Beyond Intuitive Eating Podcast, hosted by me, Beth Basham. I am a registered dietitian, certified intuitive eating counselor, and liberated body coach. I'm also a wife and mama to two amazing little people. With over 20 years of experience, I help women bridge food freedom with optimal health using principles of intuitive eating, foundations of emotional mastery, functional medicine, and neuroscience. This is the space where you get to end the war with your body and discover total confidence and true health from the inside out. I don't know about you, but when I broke up with diet culture, I also ended up breaking up with exercise. This is because exercise for me was very intertangled with diet culture. I exercised when I was young because it was fun. I was a dancer. But as I grew older, it became just another way to control my weight. I would exercise rain or shine, whether I felt like it or not, and I wore a badge of honor because I was so disciplined with my workout routines. I even purposefully worked at gyms so I could get a free membership, and I taught fitness classes to ensure I burned those calories every single day. And about a year after I discovered intuitive eating and began to heal my destructive relationship to food and my body, I all but stopped exercising too. If it wasn't for the calorie burn, then why would I exercise? But I blamed it on getting married, moving, and a bunch of other things at the time. But here's the truth. I actually really wasn't ready to look at my relationship with exercise and avoided anything that was structured or looked like something that I needed or should do for any reason. And over time, I noticed that my strength, my flexibility was decreasing. My stamina overall was not great, but I couldn't figure out how to get back into a routine with exercise without being dragged back into the obsessive space where diet and exercise culture intermingle. I missed the feeling of feeling fit and strong. And if you're anything like I was, you too want to take care of your body with movement and exercise, but you're really not sure how to do it in a way that isn't this slippery slope back into diet culture and back into obsession and, worried about how the body is going to show up, expectation and disappointment. The fact is, we know that exercise and movement are vital for our health. And some of us have limitations about how we can move our body, but there is zero question in evidence and in research that movement has incredible benefits for both our physical health, mental health, and our overall longevity and vitality. But getting back into movement can feel like a challenge, especially if we are a product of the diet culture world and we're trying to heal that relationship with food. At the same time, we're trying to look at how do we utilize movement? How do we exercise in a meaningful way that supports the health of our body without taking us down a destructive path? So this episode is going to be for you if you resonated with any of that, because there is a lot of nuance to this as well. And this is something I do in my one-to-one or group coaching containers. I really help you understand more deeply, like what is it that you specifically need to reclaim a joyful movement routine? So if you ever are interested in booking a session with me to talk about your personal needs, I do have a free 20-minute call that we can get on just to discuss if working together would make sense. Okay, that's neither here nor there, but I like to throw it out there from time to time because I think when you listen to a podcast, you don't always know how the person on the other side can actually help you go even further. So there it is. You can find the link to that 20-minute call in the show notes if that ever interests you. But let's get into the topic itself. So the first thing I want to make very clear here is that if you have been doing the work to get out of diet culture and you notice that your exercise routine is kind of waning and you want to build that, relationship back up with exercise, the first thing to be aware of is that your awareness is everything here, right? The fact that you're listening to this podcast right now, you know you have a resistance to getting into a movement routine or movement in general, is the first step. And it seems really simple and it's often overlooked, but many of us are unaware of why we do things or what we do on our day-to-day basis. And that's okay. But when we are looking at this, and if we start to notice and become aware of this idea that it makes sense that we would be resistant to exercise because there's likely been a pulling out of diet culture, right? It would make sense that you're pulling out of everything that would be related to diet culture. So if exercise was a part of you trying to maintain or lose weight or be the good girl, it could totally make sense that you would pull away from all of it. The pendulum, in other words, in so many of the clients I work with's case, including my own, the pendulum has to swing from one extreme to the other before it can find the balance. So inside of this awareness, it's helpful to start to notice, what does obsession in general, whether it's around food, our body image, or certain exercise routines, what does it look and feel like? What does it feel like when you didn't track your steps or mark down your exercise, or maybe you didn't stay on the treadmill as long as you were supposed to, right? When we become obsessed with these exercise routines, diet plans, or the way that our scale is moving one way or the other, right? This is oftentimes a habit of thinking because we think that on some level, tracking these things is going to fix us, fix our broken body. And you've heard me talk about in other podcasts that no one listening is broken, right? We're not here to fix a broken person. We're here to reclaim wellness. We're here to reclaim wholeness. And when we feel bad, when we feel guilty or shameful that we didn't do a thing, it's often because we have insecure thinking, right? Have you ever considered that there's secure thinking patterns and insecure thinking patterns? And as a human on this planet, you are going to experience both. You can't get away from insecure thinking and only be insecure thinking. But what you can do is you can become aware of when your thinking is insecure. And you know if your thinking is insecure if it makes you feel bad. Okay, so believe me, I'm coming full circle on this. So when you notice you feel bad, you might notice, what are these thoughts that I'm thinking? And how can I decide if these thoughts are actually my truth? So if you come from diet culture, from exercise culture, you might think to yourself, well, if I don't exercise 30 minutes a day and do weight training and, you know, do these, you know, 30 minutes of cardio or whatever the recommendation is these days, if you don't do it, then you failed and you feel guilty for not following through. Perhaps you make it mean that you're lazy or that you're somebody who doesn't follow through with what they say they're going to do. Those thoughts, the thoughts of I'm lazy or I don't feel through or I don't know how to live my life to the fullest because I can't stick to a routine, whatever those thoughts are, they don't let us feel good. In fact, those are examples of insecure thoughts. We don't have to believe them. I mean that. You literally don't have to believe your thoughts. Have you ever considered that? Your thoughts are oftentimes subjective, right? Thoughts come in from the subconscious. They drop in. We don't even have control of a lot of our thoughts. But what we do have is awareness of our thoughts and our awareness of how our thoughts affect our emotional state. And thoughts that make us feel bad are forms of insecure thoughts. And again, we can decide, I don't have to believe that. So in this case, I don't necessarily have to believe that I'm lazy, that I don't follow through on things, that I don't have this pursuit to live a really full life just because I didn't meet my exercise goal, right? There's likely evidence in other areas of your life that show that you aren't a lazy person. You do follow through. You do live life in different ways that may or may not be related to exercise directly, right? So there's always this cognitive opportunity through the lens of awareness to notice what diet culture, exercise culture, obsession in general actually looks and feels like in the forms of thoughts and the form of noticing how these thoughts actually lead to a certain emotional state. And I wanted to take a minute to cover all that. I know this isn't directly related to the topic, but it is because there's this bigger opportunity to use the lens of awareness as a tool of understanding something called the exercise rebel. Now, if you have been following anything within the intuitive eating world, you may have heard of the diet rebel. It's this voice inside of a dieter's head that oftentimes is ignited when she finds out about intuitive eating that says, oh my gosh, I don't have to do what they tell me to do. I don't have to eat a certain type of food, or I don't have to count calories. I don't have to portion size everything. And she's activated and she's protecting your autonomy, right? She's saying, middle finger up to the man, to the diet culture world. I'm not going to do anything that the diet culture world tells me. And oftentimes in the world of diet rebel, we oftentimes negate any positive side of nutrition recommendations that could actually be really beneficial for us. And we start to treat intuitive eating like the eat whatever you want diet. And that's really not what intuitive eating is at all. That's another podcast episode, but I just wanted to call that out because I know a lot of people can relate to this idea of having a diet rebel kind of come up and surge through when we start the intuitive eating process. We start practicing the principles. We can get really, really far away from intuition because this rebellious side of us emerges and says, I'm not going to follow any rules. I'm not even going to listen to my body, right? And we start to eat just for the sake of eating, not for the sake of listening to our body. Okay, so that example's there just as a reference. But notice in context of this podcast, there also could be an exercise rebel. So a similar voice that's like, for years of my life, I have followed a routine. I have been diligent. I have had willpower. I have shown up and done the thing. Guess what? It didn't work. It just, you know, made things worse. It made my obsession worse. It made my health worse, et cetera, and so forth. That may or may not be true, but I'm just using this as an example. And this exercise rebel is really, really standing firm in its autonomy and saying, if I am told what to do with exercise, I simply just won't. And I know I experienced this firsthand because after I'd really worked on my own relationship to food and started to heal my body image concerns, my exercise, as I mentioned, just literally fell off. I would still go on walks. I'd still like enjoy recreational activities. But I stopped lifting weights. I stopped going to exercise classes. I used to be an avid yoga practitioner. I stopped going to yoga. It was like everything fell off. And for a period of time, that wasn't a problem. There was other things going on in my life that were distractions. But over a couple of years, yes, a couple of years, I discovered that I didn't have the strength anymore. I couldn't keep up on certain hikes I wanted to go on. I really love hiking. So the fact that I couldn't climb a mountain like I used to really had an impact on my mental health. But I also witnessed and knew that I didn't want to get back into an exercise routine that would help me condition my body to do the hikes, right? If it meant that I had to like recommit. Because here's the thing, and this is so common for many of my clients. This total neglect of exercise and moving the body for health is intermingled with exercise for basically self-abuse. You know, when I used to exercise in my diet culture days, it was purely out of a need to burn calories, to fit the certain ideal body, to be the quote-unquote good dietitian, to practice what I preach. It was really, really rooted in a lot of shoulds. And I oftentimes did not listen to my body. I injured myself. I wore myself down. My intense amount of exercise actually contributed to thyroid issues, metabolism issues, and a whole bunch of gut issues. So there was this threat that exercise posed on my body. And so it wasn't just so easy for me to think, oh, I'm just going to restart an exercise routine and not worry about calories and not worry about, you know, how much, you know, how many reps I did or whatnot. Like that's easier said than done when I had also recognized that in some level, the concept of exercise was rooted in something that could hurt me. So I just want to throw that out there because this was some self-discovery I made more recently and have really actively been healing ever since, to recognize like I had this fear that my body could be injured again if I started an exercise routine because I didn't know how to listen to the cues of my body. I oftentimes went to a yoga class, which is supposed to be like all relaxing and wonderful, but I would injure myself because I noticed the instructor doing a pose that I wanted to get into. So my ego took over, I overstretched, I overdid something, and I'd injure myself, right? So there was a recalibration that I had to move through to learn how to really back off and slow down when it came to movement so that I didn't injure myself and I also protected myself. And that was a relearning of sorts. Oftentimes that relearning looks really similar in the intuitive eating phase because you do have to kind of pull back all the rules and start to slow down with food, slow down with your body to hear the signals. And not only hear the signals of the body, but also, and this is important, trust the signals of the body. So my exercise rebel was not just protecting me from becoming obsessive again, falling in the trap of, you know, overdoing it. It was actually protecting me from getting injured and hurting myself and wearing myself down like I had previously. So I don't know if you resonate with that completely, but I just use that example as a way to, well, first send myself some compassion, but also, you know, if you're struggling to get back into an exercise routine, to give yourself some compassion. Like maybe it just makes sense that you've had this resistance and you don't really know why. There's not a problem here. You're not broken. We don't need to fix you, but we do want to really meet you where you're at and ensure that you step into a movement routine that really supports you and supports you where you're at in your body in this moment, not the person you were in your 20s or your teens or even your 30s or 40s, depending on what age you come to this podcast, right? Like we really want to meet you and your body where it's at. And sometimes that can be a scary thing, not for your brain cognitively, but really for your body itself. So I also had a client of mine who had a strong exercise rebel present. And we uncovered that she didn't want to create goals or consistency with an exercise routine. You know, she wanted the strength. She wanted to be able to play with her kids outside. She wanted to have the stamina to go for a nice hike with a friend or go for a canoe ride when they're at a recreational spot. But she didn't want to commit to a routine. She's like, I don't want to set goals. I'm not a goal person. Right. And I think if you walk this path long enough, you probably really relate to that. You're like, yeah, goals are basically just setting us up for failure. And we discovered through some conversation that her fear of failure, she was afraid that if she didn't stay committed to the goal, whatever it might be, maybe it was, you know, movement 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, or something of that nature, that if she failed at that, it meant something about her, right? She was putting a lot of meaning on this concept and notion of failure. So we explored this idea that maybe failure is actually an illusion. And it's just a product of a protector part that's trying to keep us safe. But in many cases, for so many of us, this notion and idea of failure that lurks deep within our subconscious can be a form of self-sabotage. And it can keep us from those inner desires and goals that we might have for our health, for our physical fitness, or for really many other facets of our life. And it does take some courage to overcome this fear of failure and step through and do a thing for ourselves, including making a routine, recognizing that we also get to be compassionate towards ourselves if we don't meet it. You know, when I don't meet a goal, you know, and I don't follow through with the steps, it probably means for me that that goal was not right for me. I like to create quote unquote goals, and I'll tell you why I used air quotes in just a second, that I use goals, you know, I try to create goals that are really realistic and easy for me to meet. You know, we really want to create digestible, easy, measurable goals if you want to get to the root of it. Now, I've had clients tell me, and this is why I put air quotes around goals earlier, is that the word itself, goals, especially with exercise or food, is really triggering. It's really activating. And I had a client earlier today actually tell me when I used the word goal, she felt like this constriction in her body. You know what I mean? Like just totally constricted, like, ugh, goal, ugh. I then changed the word to intention. And she felt like this complete sense of relief wash over her because the word intention is not charged. The word goal, however, was charged. So it might be helpful to reframe how you set intentions for yourself when it comes to movement or exercise, because words matter. Words are meaningful to us. And when we notice a certain word creates a response of constriction or tightness in our body, it's totally worthwhile and valuable to actually just change the word. Use intention or use something else that's meaningful for you. So goals versus intentions can be a helpful shift as we're reclaiming joyful movement back into our life. And let's now talk quickly about how to do that. So we want to be strong. We want to be fit. We want to be physically healthy. It doesn't have to be attached to weight loss anymore or any certain body modification goal, right? So we can be aware of when we start to slip back into that mindset and just move ourselves gently back. But it's important to start, as I mentioned earlier, small and stay really curious, noticing where there's expectation leaking into your experience, right? The most joyful movement, in my opinion, is the type of movement that just takes you into the present moment, right? Really brings you into your body, helps you feel G-O-O-D good, helps you feel good on every level. And I know for me, like sometimes going to a spin class is actually a form of joyful movement. Other days it's going to yoga or going for a walk, right? Joyful movement looks different day to day, but when I am in the present moment in my body and releasing expectation may have looked like calorie burn, but even for somebody who's been on the intuitive eating path for a while, there could be expectation about building back strength or my body moving the same way it did when it was in its 20s. When we start to notice the expectation and hold it lightly, we can allow joyful movement and our intuitive decisions about movement to turn back online. Intuition lives in the present moment. This is just a little side tangent, but intuition, whether it's our intuition around what to eat or how to move our body, it lives in present moment. If we're living in the future or we're living in the past, it's harder to tap into our intuition. So joyful movement might be defined as movement that feels present. And that's going to look different with every single human. Some of you may be thinking and reflecting right now and thinking, gosh, you know, I felt really present when I was doing jiu-jitsu or in the old days when I went swimming in the pool or walking with a friend. So I invite you even now as I'm talking to consider, like, what does joyful movement look like for me? This is the best place to start if you want to incorporate more movement into your life. And maybe you drop the expectation around it. So maybe you did something in your younger years that felt really good. For me, as an example, I was a ballerina. I did a lot of modern dance. I love dance. Now, I can still dance, but I can guarantee that my 40-year-old body isn't going to be as flexible and bendy as my 15-year-old body. And the type of movement is going to feel different. It can still be joyful, but for me to really get into my present moment body, I have to drop the expectation that I'm going to get my leg to kick up in the air and hit my cheek. You know what I mean? I could do that at one point, and that's not really a goal for me now. The thing that is joyful for me about dance is this expression through music. So where can I start to explore that once again and see how it goes without expectation, without attachment to an outcome? That's where true movement actually lives, is without expectation or attachment. So we want to start small by dating different forms of movement, maybe forms of movement that we used to love, and finding one that really just works for us and starting there. Maybe it's walking. Maybe it's lifting weights. Maybe it's doing something with a friend. But all of us likely have some type of movement, whether small or more vigorous, that is going to bring us into our present moment body. And the only way that we can discover it is by dating, I literally say dating, different forms of movement to discover the one that's right for us. From there, we can create routine. From there, we can set intention, or even if goals isn't triggering for you, goals around how we can use that form of movement or others to create the physical strength, to create the vitality and wellness in our body that we know exercise and movement can provide for us. And it doesn't start with setting the goals and just doing it, because it starts with finding the joyful movement and then creating a routine or an intention or a goal from that place. So I'm going to end it here because I could probably keep talking. I'm pretty good at that. But I'm going to end it here. And I'd love for you to connect with me over an email, over a private message, and let me know how you've been reclaiming your relationship to joyful movement, because I have a few ideas, but it's a good chance, there is a good chance that you actually have an even better one. So thanks again for listening and sending you lots of love as you reclaim your own relationship to joyful movement once again. Thank you so much for listening in today. I am so grateful. If you enjoyed this podcast, I ask that you share with a friend who might also benefit. And if you want even more support on your food and body journey, please check the show notes for information about my free Facebook group and private coaching opportunities. See you next time.